Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, Glittering Air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoking the reefer.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
That pop?
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hey guys, welcome back to Police Academy Podcast. This is another interview episode, but much different than what we've been talking about recently on the show. This is an interview with a current member of the United States Army. He's been a part of the intelligence community. He's gone to Ranger School, which we talk a little bit about. We discuss the benefits of military service, finding a challenge that's worth defeating. Something that after you've gone through it, you can say with pride that, hey, I did that. We talk about the 2 hours of abuse he received in boot camp for something that he had no control over, which is par for the course in the military, and learning how to lead. And a whole lot more, obviously. But the reason I asked him to come and sit down and talk with me is that the personality types that are drawn to law enforcement are very similar and oftentimes the same as those drawn to military service. You see a lot of guys get out of the military and end up in law enforcement, and guys in law enforcement like me who go, hey, maybe I should have joined the military at some point. And I want, if you are a person who is still in that place in life where you could take either road, I want you to consider your options, because I didn't. Military was never really something I considered at the age when I should have been considering it. And that is a regret of mine. So if you're listening and you have that option, if you're looking to get into law enforcement and that's why you're listening to this show, think about the military. And when I say think about, don't just listen to this show and then go sign up. Do some research, know what you want to do. Don't just jump into things blindly, but there are all kinds of amazing things you can do in the armed forces, and there are plenty of amazing people doing it already, and one of those people is who you're about to hear from. So without further ado, my interview with U.S. Army Private. No, he's not a private, it's private, I can't tell you. Okay, enjoy. What made you decide to join the military?
For me, I always felt an obligation to serve. I felt like I was called to serve. For myself, I came from a religious background. I grew up going to church frequently, and I really did feel like God created me and called me to serve. In what capacity, I didn't quite know at the time.
When you say serve, you're speaking just broadly, serving in general or serving military service?
So military service,
okay,
is what I felt I was called to do. I was physically capable. It was something I had a desire to do and I had always been interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I believe myself to be a fairly intelligent individual. And even though it wasn't my only option, I felt like I could go somewhere with it and it would give me options.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly skills for when I decided to do something else with my life. I wasn't ready to attend college. I had seen it a lot that kids, because that's what we are when we graduate high school and stuff like that, or we're still kids. People don't really know what they want to do. A lot of people aren't mature enough to make those types of decisions to kind of gear their, I guess, career, if you may, in a specific direction at that age is really difficult.
Right.
It's hard to kind of refine that. And for me, I wasn't ready to make that decision and say, you know what, I know I want to be an engineer. I know I want to be a doctor.
Right.
I didn't have anything, and so I wasn't going to go spend a bunch of money or take a bunch of loans out to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt a calling to serve, and so that's what ultimately helped me make my choice.
Yeah, I think there are very few people in this world who graduate high school and know what they're going to do. And a lot of people, a lot of kids, as you said, do think they know what they want to do, but they haven't put any miles on their soul. And they get out there, they go to college for a while, and the experiences they have change their perspective, and then their interests change. And like I mentioned in the intro, a large point of this interview is so that anyone listening that is looking to get into law enforcement, obviously that's kind of the nature of this show, needs to really take a step back and look at why they want to get into it. Because you don't want to end up 10 years down the road going, man, I missed the opportunity to do something that would have fit better, and now it's too late. In many ways, I feel like I'm in that position, and I want to make sure that anyone listening that still is in that stage of life where they can pick their path takes a look at military service as well. I can't speak to that because I've never been military, but obviously you can. So that's why we're here. So has that perspective changed at all? I mean, do you still feel like currently now you're called to continue in that service, or because obviously at some point you're going to have to leave the military. Maybe that's when you retire. I don't know.
So right now, yes, the goal is retirement.
Okay.
But there are also a lot of other factors that go into it. you know, there are individuals that I've served with that have just kind of lost that desire to serve. Some of them usually are reaching the end of their tenure, you know, towards retirement, you know, have been in maybe 18, 19 years. I would say that's the vast majority of them who have lost that kind of desire, to put up with, I mean, for lack of better words, a lot of bull crap, you know, cause you put up with a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stress that goes into your everyday life, that really can create a lot of baggage and bog you down. Mm-hmm. It's not really a life that's created for assisting families, I guess I could say. So people with families usually tend to be more apt to leave the military.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I do currently feel that way. I've been serving for just over 10 years, and you know, coming up, there is a big decision that needs to be made, because in most services, I know in the Army for sure that after 10 years, depending on when your window is to basically reenlist, you need to make a decision as to whether you want to reenlist indefinitely until you put in a retirement packet, or you know, something would happen, like medically you get injured and you get, you know, basically sent out of the military, like saying thank you for your service, you're no longer necessary, or you're no longer capable of doing what you were doing. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of different ways you can leave, but after that 10 years you kind of have to make a big decision and say, look, for this next unforeseeable amount of time, because you can serve up to, you know, 30 even more years, depending on what kind of way you want to gear your career towards. You know, there's people that work at the Pentagon, you know, that are generals, and they've been serving for 32, 34, 35 years, mm-hmm. some of them, you know, almost 40 years. But it is a big decision. And for me right now, I do feel like that's where I want to, I guess, gear my efforts is towards retirement. One, because of the benefits. I feel like it's a fantastic opportunity for those people who genuinely do desire to serve in the military, to, I guess you could say, retire early, but it's not really an early retirement. What it can do for you is a few things. It'll give you a steady paycheck. You know, every month you know you'll get paid. After you do 20 years. So say you're 18 years old or even 17 years old, because there are some individuals who join around 17 years. You know, 37 years old, you've served 20 years, you put in a retirement packet and they say, hey, thank you for your service. Now, whatever the last, I think you had to have served in the last rank for the 3 years. I think it's something similar to that. They'll pay you, like, I want to say at 20 years, it's 50 or I don't know the exact numbers, but it's a decent amount of what you earned of your base pay. They just pay you monthly and they say, hey, you know, this is your retirement. And you can go and find another job. Right. You can go and find another career. And if you've set yourself up by, you know, accruing different skills or even going to school while you're in, because some people do that. Mm-hmm. They offer tuition assistance that will help you pay for college classes. So there's people that go and they get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. And at that point in their lives, they know what they want to do after the military. And so they try and gear those efforts towards that as well.
Yeah.
Following their service.
Right. And which gets back to your whole decision coming out of high school of, well, I don't know what I want to do, you know? And the military does offer one thing in spades, and that's broadening your horizons. I mean, you get to see a lot of places if that's the path you choose. Obviously, there are ways you can serve and kind of stay put. But you can also travel the entire world. Depends which branch you're in as to where you're going to end up. But travel, see things, experience different cultures, learn skill sets, even go to school. There are all kinds of advantages to, you know, joining, even if it's straight out of high school. It's like, listen, get paid to put some miles on and see what you actually want to do. There's definitely some wisdom in that path. And, you know, going back to, you know, where our paths differ, which was me exiting high school with a bunch of people telling me in various ways, well, you're going to college. I mean, it was just a given. And I fell into that. I didn't have any reason to doubt everyone else's wisdom about what I should do with my life. Right. Like I was just a kid. So that's what I did. You know, looking back, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And it wasn't even till halfway through my junior year of college that I said, I want to be a cop. So I spent 2.5 years getting gen eds and focusing on stuff that didn't in the end matter. And then switching to criminal justice and busting my tail for a year and a half to graduate within 4 years. You know, I was fortunate. I didn't end up with a bunch of school debt and all that stuff. And that was part of why I went to college. But there again, even though I became a cop and that was a really, really good fit for my career and just for my character, my personality, it didn't fit as well as I expected it to. I was looking and I still am constantly looking for a challenge. And I know you, that we think the same way there. And getting into law enforcement, I thought, you know, the academy, testing for the hiring process, it's all going to be like this big challenge. And it was a joke, to be honest. So, you know, I look back and now I go, well, you know, where was the challenge? What would have risen to the level that I was satisfied and felt like, hey, I actually accomplished something by meeting this challenge. And the only thing I have found is training that you see in special operations, basically, BUDS training. We talked about Delta Force operators training earlier today. I don't know much about that, but I'm sure it's a challenge enough, right? I know Ranger School is super tough and you've been through that. But the academy left me lacking seriously in that department. So if you're a person, you're listening and you like those challenges where you're not expected to survive, where the dropout rate is high. And if you pass it, you've really done something and you've done something that you can be proud of and that other people will see you've accomplished something. The academy's not going to do it for you. I hate to tell you, you might want to look at something else. If you're not going to be satisfied until you've proven to yourself what you can do, becoming a cop isn't it. Look at all the fat cops out there. There's a reason why fat cops exist, because you can be fat and be a cop. You can't be fat necessarily and be an active Army Ranger, Delta Force guy, Navy SEAL, in many other areas in the military, it's not going to work. But speaking of the academy, let's compare our experiences there. So my academy to your initial entry into the military, which is basic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they call it in the
Army?
Yeah,
it's basic training. So there's like basic combat training. So it's essentially, the Army's way of saying you're not a civilian anymore, you know?
Right.
You
and
now
showing
belong
you,
to
and
us.
And showing you that.
Yeah. Right. You're now government property.
Right.
So
how do they show you in basic? And I feel like everyone kind of has a general idea of what basic is like. Lots of screaming and, you know, demeaning you and trying to break you down. But how do they show you that you are no longer your own?
It's been a while, but it's a very unique experience. For those that have experienced it, I had a lot of fun in basic training. Not a lot of people say that, but I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I had one of my bunkmates who was my, I guess you call them battle buddies in basic training. They're, you know, your kind of buddy. Normally it's in alphabetical order. So you got like all the A's, all the B's, all the C's. Well, mm-hmm. you know, my battle buddy was right with me and like we did everything together. We trained together. You know, if one person got in trouble, like we both had to do push-ups together. We both had to, you know, like get smoked together. But for me, it was enjoyable. There were other people who it was harder to break that kind of idea that you are no longer your own boss. Because that's something that's really hard. Like nobody wants to be told like you can't make these decisions. Like you can't decide when you eat breakfast. You can't decide, you know, what to wear today and when to put it on. Like
right.
So it's like I said, it's definitely a unique experience, and they do it in a handful of ways. You know, I remember the first day. So what they did was they had us just put all of our stuff into these duffel bags, right? So they take all of your personal items, and if you have anything, they have like an amnesty box. So guys that come in with drugs or whatever, or alcohol, you know, you're supposed to throw it in this amnesty box, and then you know they cut your hair. So no matter what kind of hair you have, dudes come in with dreadlocks, whatever, you know, like just crazy stuff. I mean, even if you cut your hair before it, like, you know, like maybe you have a yeah. family member that's in the middle, they're still going to buzz your head. Like,
right.
And it's just this sense of like stripping you of everything that was you,
right.
And forming you into, well, their attempt to form you into the way that they want you to be. Because I think in a certain way they want you to still be an individual, but they want you to be able to be adaptable and sort of malleable, and capable of changing in an ever changing environment. So like they put us in like cattle cars, you know, just like these cattle cars, and we would ride around in them and like with all our bags and stuff, and you know, all smushed together, and then like as soon as you get out, it's just like. Just chaos, like,
right,
sort of organized chaos. So you get out and they're like screaming at you, like yelling at you to get your bags, get in line, and people are scrambling. Somebody, like, you know, somebody's over here, their bag is all like strewn about, like their clothes are all over the place, and they're trying to pick them up and getting screamed at by somebody. It's different.
I feel like, and this is what I've heard, and it makes sense, if you understand the games that are going to be played there, and a lot of it, it's all a game, right? It's their way of, like you said, creating what they want in you.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it's a game.
Yes.
It's training. None of it is real, in the sense that, like, there is no real emergency, right? There is no real rush. They're just creating that to kind of indoctrinate you. And if you go into it with the understanding of that, mm-hmm. then it's a lot easier to just go, okay, like, this is the deal. Like, this is what I expected. It's not actually that stressful necessarily,
right.
if you know going into it. Did you have a pretty good idea when you started that what it was going to be like and how to cope with that yourself?
No, I didn't. I mean, I had somewhat of an idea, but I didn't really understand like what it was going to be like.
That was your chance to prove to my audience that you're not crazy. Because if you had fun at boot camp, you were either prepared for it or you're nuts.
Yeah, so I feel like. I don't know what my expectations were going into it. I expected to be yelled at. I expected to be, you know, told what to do. My goal was to just excel in everything that that I could. I remember we had this one drill sergeant. He was just a bear of a man. He was an infantry guy. and he rode me hard. I mean, it did not matter what I did. There was one day we had to do something and we had to leave our weapons with weapons guards. And sure enough, my weapon got taken because somebody wasn't paying attention. You know, whoever was guarding the weapons didn't pay attention. So I just remember getting pulled aside with my battle buddy and him coming up and just chewing me out and, you know, being like, where's your weapon? And I was like, well, we've got, you know, picked to go do this other detail. And, you know, we had to leave him with weapons guards and stuff. And he's like, well, you know, just starts yelling at us. And I remember for about 2 hours, we were doing like squats, push-ups, you know, lifting our rifles. Like, and I remember thinking to myself, I was pretty cocky then. I was pretty, you know, a little arrogant and very confident in my abilities. I remember thinking to myself, you know, you can try and make me tired. You can try.
Yeah.
And so like for 2 hours, yeah, he just yelled at us and everything. And so like, I think in a certain sense, my goal was to impress him. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, this guy that just rode me all the time. And later in basic training, when we were about to finish, it was actually really, really interesting and really unique. And one of the things that I'll always remember is, you know, he had approached an individual and he said, you know, yeah, that guy, he reminds me of me when I was young. You know, he's real squared away, he's fit, he's good at shooting. And he never told it to me, but right, I heard it through another party. And it just, it meant a lot to me because he was a very, very professional individual. And at that time, you know, it's like, those are the only people you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like someone to kind of look up to. You know, he was a seasoned warrior, an infantry guy. It was just really neat. It was a unique way of kind of saying like, I'm proud of you, even though he didn't say it to me.
Right, all you got from him was him screaming in your face,
yeah,
making you do stuff for 2 hours.
But it was good because like, you know, like for me, I'm okay with that, and it helps me push myself. For other people, it's not necessarily that way.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see how people who don't respond well to that. You know, I feel like I would do okay. I definitely don't handle. If you accuse me of something that's not true, or you attack my character and you're off base, like I'm pretty well aware of my issues, but if you accuse me of something that just ain't right, I don't handle that well.
And, yeah.
But then again, like being in basic or just in the military in general, that's just the territory you're in.
Absolutely.
So I feel like it might be different. It wouldn't be any easier necessarily, but you just know you got to keep your mouth shut sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're dealing with, you know, I mean, rank is definitely power in the military.
Right.
And this is something that's really kind of unique, to us. It's really odd. Some people really let it go to their heads.
That's not surprising at all. Let me contrast the academy. The law enforcement academies can be very different depending on where you're at, but mm-hmm. by and large, it is not nearly as hierarchical and militaristic as the military boot camp or, you know, really any military training. I've talked about this before on the show, but if you're going to be a trooper, you might see some more of that. And obviously there are other academies that aren't for state patrol offices that are more militaristic, but it's not going to be, most likely not going to be as much so as the military itself. you're not going to see as many of the mental games, although half the time during the academy, I couldn't tell if they were playing mental games with us or if they were just that stupid. Like, one time we showed up for class, no one had their handcuffs with them, you know? And we had just started doing, we were just getting into handcuffing and, you know, taking people into custody and handcuffing technique and stuff. But no one told us we needed to bring this piece of equipment to class. It wasn't something that we were required to have with us as a general rule. So the entire academy class walks in the room and they're like, all right, you all have your handcuffs, right? And we're like, no. There were like 10 people that had them, you know, and they're all the, they're trying to win brownie points. Like, oh yeah, I got mine. And we're all like throwing stuff at them. Like, shut up, you know? And so we get shootout. They send the entire class down to the director's office and we walk in there and okay, this is not the military. It is, we still have our identities. This isn't, we didn't get our head shaved. We still have our phones. We can talk to our family members on at night or whatever. This isn't the military and so it's kind of in this weird gray area and we're like, are they messing with us or are, like, is this guy this really this dumb? We go down to the director's office and she's like, yes, as the entire class tries to like squeeze into her office. You know, we're all like outside her door. She's like, why are you all standing out here? So we explain it to her, like, you're the last one. You talked to us at the end of last class, whatever, told us to be back here at this time. You know, you didn't tell us to bring handcuffs and that's why we're down here. They said we need handcuffs. And she's just like, okay, well, I guess, like, you could tell she couldn't punish us or didn't feel like she could because she knew she didn't tell us. There were a lot of games like that where we were getting yelled at and in trouble for their mistakes most of the time. And honestly, I think it was just their own disorganization. A lot of them were really new. A lot of them didn't have a lot of law enforcement experience. So that was interesting. We did not get treated like, you know, guys at basic, which I appreciated. I didn't really want that experience at the academy. I wanted a challenge. I'm sure basic would have been more so of a challenge, but you went into basic probably in really good shape. Was it a challenge physically at all for you?
Physically, basic
aside from
training,
the 2 hours yeah, straight no, of this, abuse.
Physically, basic training was not challenging. Okay. I mean, we had a very large guy come to basic training. Mm-hmm. And now, granted, he lost a great amount of weight by mm-hmm. the end of basic training. And you see that. Normally, you'll get some guys that are usually pretty big guys. They've always been like their whole life. And they'll come out of basic and they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, like I was in the best shape of my life. But that wasn't me.
In the academy, at least in our academy, the experience I had with physical was the weakest link determined the pace. So the bar in general with the academy I was at was set low enough such that the least common denominator was going to pass. Mm-hmm. So you had guys that were in an area where the competition for the job was much higher, therefore the just general, you know, physical conditioning of that officer was better, or you know, the education level, the level of intelligence was much higher for those departments. And then you had guys that they were like literally the only person for the job within 100 miles, so they got the job. You know, and not to say anything against any of the people that were there. They were all good people that signed up to do a good job. But that is a problem if you're looking at, you know, what is the end result? It's that a bunch of people graduate the academy, are now certified as law enforcement officers in this state, can carry a badge and a gun, have arrest powers, are authorized to use deadly force, that have been trained at the least possible, you know, level, so such that we could train people all around the state. Definitely problematic. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, a lot of those departments take their people and train them a lot more once they get back. but it's certainly an issue that was concerning to me and still is. You said you respected the guy that picked you as his favorite during boot camp, which kind of brings up a point that was important for me as an officer. And I know we talked about a little bit earlier today for you in the military, as far as your boss matters a lot. And this, I mean, this expands beyond law enforcement service, military service. Obviously, right. If you work for someone who's an idiot, your life might suck for a while. But in the military, rank is everything. Mm-hmm. And if you're stuck working for somebody and you often don't have, and correct me if I'm wrong anywhere in this conversation, because I am an ignorant civilian, but I feel like you have much less choice as to who is in charge of you, right? And if you have a crappy boss or, you know, superior officer, your life can be hell.
Absolutely. It's really challenging in some circumstances. The best advice that I usually give to people, I've been blessed with, in my opinion, good leadership qualities. Any subordinates that I have, I won't ever force them to do something that I won't do myself or I won't do with them. and that's a quality that you don't always find in the military, even as a service industry, I guess you could say, almost is what the military is. Our job is to serve, but you don't find a lot of people who have that kind of character, I guess you could say.
Right.
And it's more about the power that you can exert over others, mm-hmm. than it is about how you can assist those individuals, how you can help them, and how you can make their lives better or improve them, mentor them, and provide guidance to, you know, give them new skills or personal and professional development is huge to me. So with us, we use like counseling techniques and stuff like that. And, you know, it's the idea is to go from superior all the way down to the lowest subordinate, but it rarely happens that way.
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely challenging, and leadership does make a huge world of difference. And there are a lot of times when you just have to bite your tongue and work for somebody that's maybe not a very good person.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. I same experience with me in law enforcement. And as I said, this certainly translates outside of the worlds that we live in, or, you know, that I lived in and you're currently in. But there were supervisors and, you know, sergeants in our case, and lieutenants who are above the sergeants, who were just, they might not have been bad people. There were some for sure that I wouldn't work for simply on principle, that I couldn't trust them. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you know, I'm not going to work for someone who I can't trust to have my back, whether it's in the field tactically or politically. If something goes down and I did my job right, I knew that these guys, and they were few. Most of the people I worked with were great. These guys would throw me under the bus, mm-hmm. in a heartbeat if it gave them one more notch up for that next promotion, whatever, if it made them look good. It didn't matter. They were out for them. They weren't out. They weren't a supervisor. They weren't a leader, quote unquote, because they were actual leaders. It was about, mm-hmm. power. It was about making more money, about having those stripes. Fortunately, I don't remember a time where I was bid to a shift where I actually had to work directly under anyone like that. And that was intentional. Fortunately, I had the option, and I knew who I would work for, and I knew who I wouldn't. So I had that choice. You don't necessarily, you know, there's a chain of command, right? So you can't pick the entire chain. You can pick your direct supervisor, and that's what I'm speaking to. But I was fortunate as well to have really good supervisors in law enforcement. But if you're thinking about getting law enforcement, you're thinking about getting into the military, realize that your coworkers And the quality of people you work with is one thing. Who you work for is an entirely different thing and can affect your career and your life in very dramatic ways. Something to consider if you aren't very good at, well, I'm not good at keeping my mouth shut when people say stupid things. You do stupid, say stupid things, you win stupid prizes, and I usually let them know when they win that prize. Just keep that in mind. If you're that type of person that pushes back against authority pretty strongly, it might be pretty rough. You might want to consider that before jumping in to law enforcement or military service. I know that's definitely my temperament. I feel like it's probably yours too. That's the impression
it
I
is.
Get.
Yeah.
So how did you, what's the mental, the self-talk to help you stay out of trouble and keep your mouth shut when you know it's not worth the fight?
So it does, in certain circumstances, it does take a lot of restraint. You have to kind of know when and where to pick your battles, when you can win and when you can't, and how you can win and how you can't.
And if it's worth winning.
Absolutely. So, you know, the biggest thing you can do is if you're in a position to affect other people, you make sure that whatever... If there's somebody above you who is, you know, a poor leader or micromanages or, you know, just makes everybody's lives horrible because they may be unhappy themselves, you do what you can to affect those people underneath you in a more positive way, and you shelter them from what you can. Mm-hmm. You know, so in a sense, you're almost a protector as well of those people to try and say, you know, hey, look, use this as a tool as well. Because if you decide to keep continuing down this path and keep going in your career as a service member, remember this. Remember this individual. Remember how they lead. I guess I could say that in quotes, you know, how they lead. And find examples. You know, there are good examples and there are bad examples of anything. And leadership is absolutely one of those. And so for me, it's a constant learning process. You know, it's a way of getting wiser. It's a way of thinking and then listening and then, you know, or I should say, you know, listening first, then thinking and then speaking. Because too often, you know, we as human beings, we try and allow our emotions to take control of us, and it's hard not to. It is absolutely hard not to. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of circumstances in the military where you cannot allow your emotions, and I'm sure law enforcement is the same. You can't allow your emotions to cloud your judgment.
Yeah.
In, you know, a lot of circumstances, to include circumstances where, you know, people's lives are at stake.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all the way from just burning the wrong bridge, mm-hmm. that's going to affect your career years down the road to, yeah, literally somebody's life. So you're right on there. It's always baffled me how people have been in a career, you know, my experience, law enforcement, have been a road patrol officer for so long, who have worked for great supervisors and terrible ones, and they can point out what makes the difference between a great sergeant and a terrible one, or a great lieutenant and a terrible one, but then they become one and they're terrible. It's like they completely forget what it was like to be under that kind of person, mm-hmm. to be micromanaged by someone when you're fully capable of doing your job, right? Like, That is just a human quality that I don't understand. I liken it to a bunch of kids in line to do some sort of activity, and there's a certain way you have to do it. Maybe it's like a little blow up obstacle course, right? And like, if you just watch the kid in front of you, you learn the little tricks to right. get through this obstacle course. And the kids that have that special thing, that will lead them to be great supervisors because they paid attention and learned from those great supervisors ahead of them. Those are the kids that nail the obstacle course the first time because they learn vicariously just by watching mm-hmm. other people. And I think that's a pretty rare trait. I don't think most people learn that way. I think even if it's not natural for people, that you can learn that way. You just have to be more intentional. I know it's natural for me. I just, if I see it done once, I can do it. And I'm always paying attention because I don't want to be the guy at the front of the line that doesn't know what I'm doing, even though 20 people went ahead of me and showed me. That just drives me crazy. But I think that's a rare thing. And unfortunately, it represents in terrible supervisors who, like I said, they complained when they were grunts about crappy supervisors and they knew what made a great one, but they don't implement it. You know, they become terrible supervisors. That's my soapbox. I'm getting off of it, but it drives me crazy anytime you see those guys. And, you know, you just wonder, why did you become a supervisor? You know, if it's not for the betterment of the men and women that are under your charge, what is it? And are you a leader if it's not for that? I mean, that's the big question. I don't care what stripes you wear, what color your nameplate is. Are you really a leader? You know, if you're just there for yourself. I don't know. I mean, I do know, but
yeah.
And it shows. It shows in the morale of your crew for sure. But Ranger School, let's talk about that. This is something that I think a lot of people don't understand. When someone says, I am, in your case, an Army Ranger, can we say that? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't understand that it's not necessarily the same thing as being a Navy SEAL, where if you go to BUDS and go, and I bring up the SEALs a lot because I know more about them. I know it's Navy, so sorry, but
that's all right.
If you're Navy SEAL, you're a SEAL, and you're gonna be on the teams for a while. You're gonna serve in that direct capacity, but you can go to Ranger School, and you're not necessarily directly involved with the regiment full time.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
That's correct.
So there are a lot of people that have a Ranger. It's called a Ranger tab, right?
Yes.
So you have this Ranger tab on your uniform that says that you've gone through Ranger School. I don't know what do they call it, Ranger certified, or you're just
a
Ranger.
Yeah. So you're just Ranger qualified. So okay. You have most of the guys that go through are already airborne qualified. So they end up coming out of it as an airborne Ranger or a Victor coded slot.
Because one of the main functions of the Rangers is taking down like large airfields and stuff like that.
So yeah, it's airfield seizure and things like that. But that's not training that's done in Ranger School.
Okay.
That's something that's specific to Ranger Regiment. So you've got 1st Battalion, you've got 2nd Battalion, and 3rd Battalion, two of which are in Georgia, and then one is in Washington State.
And those are the three regiment battalions?
Yes. Okay. And so those guys, they're mainly a direct action effort. I have a couple of buddies who work as support.
Define that direct action
effort. So direct action. So you think of direct action as like, you know, running and gunning, you know, kicking down doors, blowing stuff up. Majority of their missions are going to be similar to that. So they will have, you know, airfield seizure and securing things like that. But normally they're used in the capacity of, you know, maybe a raid or an ambush. So they do a lot of combat missions. They're very frequently engaged in those types of missions. Without going too much into it, yeah, like they do a lot of shooting, they do a lot of training, and they have a lot more specialized training mm-hmm. at regiment than, for example, if you're just an airborne qualified soldier in the United States Army, or I'm sorry, a Ranger qualified soldier in the United States Army, that doesn't mean you're going to have all of those specifications and you have gone through all of those training opportunities that those guys at regiment would get. so I myself haven't served in regiment, but I have buddies who have, but they're not infantry. So they're normally doing other stuff, while the infantry guys are the ones that are normally engaged in, you know, those raids and ambushes, and normally the ones that are in, I guess, the line of fire, you could say.
Okay, so first of all, I have two questions. Are the regiment battalions part of special forces? Are they under SOCOM, or are they under something else?
So they are part of special operations. So you've got special forces, and you've got the Rangers, and those guys conduct the majority of those missions. The special forces guys, now they're in a handful of different locations. They've got a couple of different groups.
Are you just speaking within Army or?
Within the Army. Okay. Yeah. I can't really speak to some of the other services. I know a little bit about it, but not too terribly much.
Okay. And then the other question I have is, what is the benefit of going to Ranger School if you're not going to be in one of the battalions, in regiment? Why do they send you to Ranger School? Why did you want to go to Ranger School?
So for me, I always knew that it would be something that I would want to do, and the opportunity never presented itself until I, of course, went to the school. but for me, it was I had originally intended to join the Army and go straight into the pipeline for it was an 18 X-ray program is what it was called. An 18 series, so you have all of the MOSs. There's 18 Bravo, 18 Charlie, 18 Delta, 18 Echo. Those guys are Special Forces qualified. So they have their long tab. They've gone through Special Forces Assessment and Selection. They've gone through the Special Forces Qualification Course, and they've received their Green Berets. They've got their long tabs, which is a Special Forces tab. And I had originally intended to go that path when I first joined the Army. Unfortunately, I didn't make that choice, and I kind of kicked myself for not doing that.
So you ended up not signing up through that?
Right. So I joined as a different MOS, so okay. A different occupational specialty in the military. But that was where my heart always was. I relish challenges. Mm-hmm. I do. I feel like I thrive in sort of chaotic environments.
Where your heart was always was with the special forces route?
My heart is always in. Yes, like my heart has always been with the special forces route. And I intend on, you know, as soon as I can, attending selection for special forces. But right now I'm transitioning to another assignment, so I can't do that just yet. My heart has always been there. But like I love challenges, and I knew that Ranger School would be an opportunity to challenge me physically, mentally, just all around. And, you know, when I was a specialist, I had a company commander that was Ranger qualified. And he, I was a PFC, and he promoted me to specialist. And I remember he went to shake my hand after he promoted me. He, you know, pinned me and everything. And he shook my hand, and there was something in his hand. And he had talked to me about Ranger School before, and he had said, you know, hey, I know you're going to go at some point in your career. When you do, like, you know, you would just give me tips here and there. And he talked about his experiences. And so he shook my hand, and when he shook my hand, I took what was out of his hand, and it was a Ranger tab. It was an old Ranger tab that he said he had been given, and it's something that's sort of like a tradition between guys that are Ranger qualified. Normally what you'll do is, you know, a tab that you've worn, you'll give it to somebody else as a drive on tab is what they call it. And you'll say, you know what, I see qualities in you that I think you would excel in this environment. And this is a way you could challenge yourself and see what you're made of.
Yeah.
As a man, you know, mm-hmm. And so for me, like as soon as I found out that there was an opportunity for me to go, I immediately jumped on it. I mean, I said, you know what, like this is what I love. I love finding more about myself because that's really it's seen as the Army's premier leadership school. But really, when you go, you learn a lot about yourself. There's a lot of time for reflection. And it's a really unique experience.
How long is it?
So it's, I can't remember if it's 62 or 63 days, but it's just over a couple months start to finish, but the majority of individuals don't go straight through. Yeah. I mean, I knew some guys that went straight through. One of my buddies went straight through and he was the honor graduate. And, I mean, he's just an exceptional guy. I mean, he's crazy. He's actually serving in regiment right now. So,
yeah. And if you're not going, if you don't make it straight through, it's because you've been what they call recycled.
Yes.
At some point during the process where, for whatever reason, they say, okay, you didn't pass, and you're just going to have to redo that section.
Yes.
And that's what takes longer.
Yes. So there's a couple of different ways that can happen. You can get safety violations. You can get...
for guns going off while you're cleaning them?
For a number of things. You can get peered out. They do peer evaluations at the end of each phase. Yep. And the individuals can say, you know, this guy didn't, you know, he didn't pull his own weight, or, you know, really whatever. If they have beef with you, you know, maybe you just don't get along with them. Like, I don't know, maybe you're kind of a quiet guy and everybody else is real loud and rowdy. I mean, it could be anything. So peers is another way. And then, there's also like, you can get like spot reports is what they call them. So they'll say like, hey, your canteen wasn't tied on right. That's a spot report. So that's mm-hmm. like a negative, a major minus, or, you know, a minor minus. And you can get up to so many major minuses, and so many minor minuses add up to a major minus. And then if you know, accrue so many during that cycle, or during that phase, I should say, they'll say, hey, look, you got to go to the board, because you have to go through a company and battalion board and explain what happened. So you, I mean, you have to man up. Like, you right. don't have the opportunity to kind of shy away and be like, no, like, you know, there was a mistake here. Like, they'll bring out the peer reports and they'll say, you know, so somebody said this about you.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Right. It's all on you.
Yeah. And so you either need to like kind of swallow your pride and be like, yeah, like I screwed up, I made a mistake, or, you know, you can try and argue with them. Go ahead, please be my guest, but you're probably not going to win that fight.
Right. Interesting. What else is interesting about Ranger School?
If you love nature, I'll say this. If you love nature, Ranger School is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. The mountains in Dahlonega are gorgeous. Dahlonega, Georgia is where you do mountain phase. that's a couple weeks long and it's pretty brutal. but it's a really fun time. Mountains was really unique. It's kind of where you find out who's a man and who's a boy. Mm-hmm. It's really, really physically challenging. You've already gone a couple weeks, you know, you did rap week, you went through Darby, you know, so you did the majority of the, you've kind of jumped through those physical hoops that were required for you to continue on in Ranger School. So you've got rap week where you do, you know, your RPFT. So you got a 5 mile run, 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and you got to do the minimums, and then you got to do pull-ups. And so, you know, your 5 mile run has to be under 40 minutes. There's certain things. You have to do so many push-ups, so many sit-ups, so many pull-ups. And, you know, you got to think about, you've been getting very little sleep. Like, you really haven't. I went during the winter. So normally you're cramping up because you didn't drink enough water. But yeah, so when you get to mountains, you're already tired. You're already cold. You're already hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not getting a lot of food. I mean, relatively, you're getting a lot of food, but for the amount of calories you're burning right. daily.
Not getting enough.
Yeah, not even close. So, I mean, your body just starts eating itself, so you smell like cat piss all the time. You know, you can just smell the ammonia. But, yeah, it's beautiful. There's a lot of fun, a lot of really, really cool stuff you learn there. So you do a lot of rappelling. You got your rescue Randy mission where they simulate a downed helicopter, mm-hmm. and then you go and rescue the downed pilot. That's pretty cool.
Are you supposed to succeed at that?
It depends on what the instructors want you to do. And honestly, it depends on who's in leadership that day. You know, it could go really great. It could go really, really poorly. Yeah. Every day is an adventure at Ranger School.
Yeah.
Every day is an adventure.
Sounds like a good slogan for Ranger School.
Every day is an adventure.
Ranger School sounds like fun. I have heard stories about it and read some stuff about it, and it definitely sounds like something I would enjoy. I'm sure I probably wouldn't be saying that in the middle of it.
Yeah, you never do in the middle of it.
Let's move on to, I didn't know if I wanted to go here because it's kind of political. Do you have a sense of the military community, or at least the part of it that you're connected with, as to the reaction of Mad Dog Mattis being appointed? I didn't really plan on going here, but it just came to mind.
You know, I've heard things, but I haven't really talked to anybody about it in the military currently. So I can't really speak as to like what the community as a whole is sort of feeling. I think in my opinion, though, I would say that, you know, I would like to see more individuals who have served in any sort of capacity, whether that's law enforcement or has had a successful military career, serve, you know, our country in another way. You know, as a politician, whether that be a president or a vice president or somebody on the cabinet. You know, if you go back to when our nation was founded, you look at the majority of those individuals, they were previously soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not saying I think that it should be obligatory or anything like that, or that, you know, we don't have people that, you know, do take care of us in some sort of way. But I think it could do us some good, because I think a lot of things get kind of thrown to the wayside. And, you know, you look at the VA, it's a different process for, you know, evaluating individuals who have service-connected disabilities, and it's cumbersome. Like, there are some ways that I think having people like that who have experienced it can help people in the future, especially those who have served. So I think it's a good thing, but I don't know. I mean, I haven't served with him. I can't really attest to what type of, you know, leader he is, or what type of character he has as an individual. So
yeah,
it's hard to say.
I've heard good things about it, all good things about him. I think the fear that I've heard from the civilian world, and this is why there's a law that says you have to be out of the military for, I think it's 7 years before you can serve in the capacity that he's been nominated for, the Secretary of Defense, which he hasn't been out that long. And the whole reason, the rationale behind that, from my understanding, is that you don't want somebody who is too closely tied still to the military now in charge of the whole dog and pony show. But on the other side, you know, the first thing I see is what you just said, that he has a very intimate understanding of what it's like from the ground up. And, you know, hopefully that will help him make the military better, not only at what it does, but better for everyone who makes that possible, right? He gets how bad the VA sucks, and will be passionate about making that better. And he understands that war is hell, and also understands how to win a war. I certainly have the impression that we have been tying the hands of our warriors for quite some time now. And that's kind of why I asked this about Mattis, because when he got the pick, a lot of people were excited because he's known, at least if you look back in his career, for being pretty tenacious and getting after it and understanding that if we're going to go to war, let's go to war. And we certainly haven't been doing that. So I think people are, and I personally as well, am excited to see our military hopefully get the gloves taken off a little bit. Hopefully. I'm sure a lot of, if anyone's military that's listening, you're going, yeah, a lot, please. have you seen or experienced a lot of, or heard about a lot of people in the military feeling like, why do we have these gloves on? When are we gonna untie our hands and let us do what we're here to do? So ultimately, the military's job is to defend this country, to defend Americans, America, the idea of it as a whole. And that involves, unfortunately, war. That's why the military is there.
There was one individual when I was going through Ranger School, he was, you know, just kind of hemming and hawing. And he had talked about, you know, one of his more recent experiences overseas when he was in Afghanistan. He said, you know, it was really unfortunate because there were times when they would be getting attacked. They'd be getting ambushed and fired upon, and they had to call and request basically for permission to fire back at people who were trying to kill them. You know, like,
right.
I mean, it just seems absurd.
In what world does that make
any sense?
Yeah,
it seems absurd, but there are people out there who believe that that's how it should be. I'm not one of them.
Yeah,
but
neither am I. Yeah, and those are the kind of stories that I'm talking about, where it's like, as a civilian, if you weren't in uniform in the military, you'd have every legal right to fire back. But because you're in a U.S. Army or a Marine uniform or whatever uniform you're in, and you're subject to the current rules of engagement, which change, and that's kind of what we're getting at here, is that the rules of engagement that we've had under let's not make any bones about it,
under the Obama administration,
have been extremely restrictive. And you're getting shot at. Your job is to kill bad guys that don't like America, that are threatening the safety and security of Americans and our country as a whole. And they're currently shooting at you, and you're not allowed to shoot back without express permission. There is a huge issue there that says that there are people, number one, that politics is way too involved, which, I mean, that's a given if you're realistic about the military, but that there are people making decisions about your life as someone who's serving the military that probably shouldn't be making those decisions.
I mean, it's a really challenging issue. It is, absolutely. You know, politics is involved. The media is incredibly involved, which is surprising to me. You know, I think in a wartime situation, war is war, and it is not pretty. It is not gorgeous, and it won't be. Some things happen in war that, you know, people don't intend for. Sometimes people get killed that weren't supposed to get killed. I mean, that happens in law enforcement circumstances as well. And, unfortunately, I think, you know, the media tries to portray, you know, certain things in certain people in the military as almost evil. You know, I remember, when I was in a more liberal city going through some training, and there were people outside the gates, you know, holding up signs that said like baby killer and stuff like that, and like throwing rocks at people. And I'm just like, you know, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I
listened to a podcast recently. I won't say his name, mostly because I can't remember it and I really don't care to, but this guy was I want to say he's a former Ranger. And he fought in some pretty tough places. According to him, did some pretty terrible things that he obviously regrets. And apparently no one told him that war is hell before he went. But you can tell it messed him up. And this guy is pretty just generally anti the man. That one of his platforms on the internet actually has that in the name. It's something against the man. Like that's what this, that's how he's branded himself, and for good reason. I mean, like he's anything that has to do with government and authority, he's against, just because it has to do with the government and authority. And he's on this someone else's show talking about a little bit about his experiences, but mostly saying that he is just completely against war, against governments deciding who should fight each other, et cetera, so on and so forth. And I understand that from fundamentally, I understand it. I get that, okay, I don't want there to be war. Individually, it'd be great to have a world where we didn't need war. And I know to say that we need war might upset a lot of people listening, but that's, I'll stand by that. War is a necessity, unfortunately, and I don't see any way that we're ever going to be able to avoid it in the future. It's just something that is going to be part of the human experience. There's not a whole lot we can do about it, unfortunately. This world is full of messed up people, and unfortunately, a lot of those people end up in power, and unless someone steps up and does something about it, the world is going to be a lot worse off. And that's not to suggest that every war that we fight, every battle we fight, every mission that we send guys on is a good one. You know, there are plenty of examples where that's not the case. But to suggest that that war is something that we can do without, that it's wrong no matter what, is so naive. And to protest against the men and women who volunteer their lives, you know, in service to protecting the country, I don't understand it either, because they're missing such a large piece of that puzzle. And this is where we're in the same boat. If you're looking at law enforcement or military service, we both experience the same phenomenon with culture, with politics, and with the media. If you haven't been in the military, you don't get it. And if you haven't been a cop, you don't get it. And that is why I do this show, because how can we as police officers, as a law enforcement community, expect the public to understand unless someone is willing to sit down and explain it and not just blindly defend the police? Someone's got to do it. But we're definitely in the same boat. The media portrays things in such a way that it is at best just inaccurate and unfair, and in most cases it's just supporting a narrative that's just completely false, and it does affect what happens on the ground. And unfortunately, it ends up, as it does in the military, it ends up getting people killed because they don't feel confident and comfortable doing what they know they need to do to carry out their task, which is different. In the military, you've got this mission. In law enforcement, you've got a very different one, but in both cases, you might end up dead because of all these factors outside of the actual boots on the ground reality that are telling you what you can and can't do. So if you're looking to go into law enforcement or the military, it's 6 to 1, half a dozen the other. You're gonna find yourself in that same situation. I do think, like I said, under the outgoing administration, if you're in the military or thinking of joining, you've probably got it worse as far as that goes, because it's war. And if you've got rules of engagement that are so restrictive that you're taking fire and not being able to return without permission, that is worse. As an officer, if someone's shooting at you, you're going to shoot back. Right. You don't have those types of rules and engagement. It comes out in a different way. The risk comes out in a different way. And that is, even if you do everything right, even if you follow which for police officers, the rules of engagement are the Constitution and Supreme Court case law that say what you can and can't do, what your legal authority is. And even if you follow those to the T, you could still get crucified and lose everything. That is where, that's the rub if you're a police officer getting into law enforcement.
Yeah, no, I agree. you know, we have a lot of different things that we have to abide by. You know, you've got the Geneva Convention, you've got the law of war.
Which, by the way, your enemies don't abide by.
Yeah.
Right?
We have, you know, different rules of engagement, depending on the scenario and the situation. Yeah, it's a lot to take in. And there's a lot of decisions to make in, you know, a very short period of time, just like law enforcement. But you have to make a decision quickly, and you have to move forward with that decision.
Yeah. The mission of the military and law enforcement is obviously totally different. As a police officer, your job is public safety, enforcing the law. You're basically society's band-aid. In your experience, what is the role of the military? Just to give the people that might actually take one or the other of the two paths an idea what the difference is.
So the way that I see it is, you know, you have all these different, it's an organization. So it's not a business, it's an organization. It's a very large organization that has a lot of different people that work in different ways to protect our nation and our nation's assets. And then as well as our allies and some of our allies' assets, depending on what kind of treaties we have with them, you know, what kind of agreements we have. That's our goal. You know, we work as a large organization or almost even a machine, you know, to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it in different ways, in different places, through different means. There's a lot of different things that happen behind the scenes to ensure the protection of the United States, you know, throughout all of the services, to include government organizations. You know, you got your three-letter organizations, the FBI, the CIA, the DEA, guys like that, Homeland Security, law enforcement. I would say, like, the military works hand-in-hand with almost everyone to make sure that the United States and its interests and its assets are protected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the simplest way to put it, I think.
Which brings up a good point, and that is a big difference between being in the military and being in law enforcement. The civilian world likes to talk about the police as one giant organization or entity, and that's not the reality of it. The police are, if you're a cop, you are part of a much smaller machine. Even if you took all the police officers in the U.S., that is still a much smaller group than the U.S. military. But within the group of all cops in the U.S., each individual department is its own thing. There is no federal overarching umbrella organization that controls all police within the U.S. In the military, you are part of that giant behemoth of a machine.
Mm-hmm.
So you are one very, very small number in a huge pool of people.
You're a cog on the wheel.
Yep, you're just one little itty bitty cog in a giant machine. As an officer, you are a much bigger percentage of that machine itself. So just to give some perspective there. That's all I've got, man. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no problem. My wife's like freaking out on me.
I guess you're checking your phone.
Well, so. I guess my family showed up, like my brother and sister and stuff. And I'm like, I didn't know they were coming over.
All right. We'll let you get out of here.
All right, man.
That's a wrap for this one, ladies and gents. Private, thanks for joining me. As you could all hear, he was getting some angry texts from the old wife and family at the end of the show. So I hope you guys understand the sacrifice not only he's making for his country, but just making to be on the show. Much appreciative of that. Can't thank him enough. If you're in the armed forces and you're listening, thank you. Thank you for your service. I know it's cliche, but I really do mean it. I know some people don't like hearing that, but I don't know what else to say, because what you do is supremely important. I know it's not glorious, but it's got to be done. So thank you for doing it. And Merry Christmas to all of our service members, wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now. Merry Christmas. And if you're listening and you know somebody who is in the armed forces right now, especially if they're not at home, make sure you reach out to them. Tell them Merry Christmas, send them a card, whatever you got to do. Just let them know you're thinking about them. I'm sure they'd appreciate it more than you know. All right, that's it for this one, ladies and gents. I will see you on the next one. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing, and never stop believing.